How to become time rich. Before we dive into today's episode, I want you to head on over to heatherchauvin.com/live and join our next live webinar. It's June 6th and the 13th. So I have two live dates for you if you cannot make one. Also, what I wanted to say is when I am teaching live webinars, there's a lot of doing. So create the space, bring your pen and paper, and head on over to Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/live, L-I-V-E. How to become time rich for busy women managing people, raising children, and deeply desiring more from life. Have you ever sat and wondered, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get my shit together? Or maybe you feel like you have your shit together, but you can't seem to break through to the next level. You find yourself cycling around your goals, not fully jumping in, committing, or maybe you're like me and you love a good challenge. So you jump all the way in and then feel the whiplash of your emotions, fear, judgment, shame, overwhelm. Why do some humans have this unbreakable resilience while others seem to run and hide from their emotional discomfort? This is the question I ask myself on a daily basis and the one I am determined to solve on this podcast. I'm here to ask the emotionally uncomfortable questions and help women thrive in all areas of their life. I'm a TEDx speaker, author of Dying to Be a Good Mother, and host of this podcast. I'm here to help women take radical responsibility for how they want to feel in all areas of their life so they can show their children how good life can feel. I started my career as a social worker, helping adults see and understand their children's behavior. But it wasn't until stage 4 cancer in 2013 that pushed me to take a deeper stand for change, uncovering how cultural expectations sabotage our dreams. I've been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur, Real Simple, Google, MindBodyGreen, and more. And the number one question I get asked over and over again is, Heather, how do you do it all while having energy left over? Simple answer is, I don't. I plan my week in alignment with how I want to feel. And I want to show you exactly how to do this yourself. So head on over to Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/energy. heatherchauvin.com/energy. I have some freebies over there for you. Videos, PDFs, bonuses, how to stop yelling, how to hold healthy boundaries, and the common reasons why women block their success. Let's dive in to today's episode.
Butterflies. They were flying around at alarming speeds inside my stomach and making me queasy. So I gripped a steering wheel and turned up my music to try and distract me as I dodged the afternoon rush hour traffic. But despite my best efforts, my mind was racing and I grew increasingly uncomfortable at the thought of meeting 4-year-old Nicholas for the very first time. I kept trying to remind myself that I was just excited. This was just excitement. That's all it was. But I knew it was much more than that. I was actually terrified. I drove into the airport and followed the arrival signs until I got to baggage claim. Still feeling completely unprepared, I reluctantly shifted my car into park. Within a few moments, I saw Nick wave with one hand as he guided little Nicholas with the other. They both briskly walked through the crisp spring Detroit air, opened my back door, and slid inside. "Hey, Nicholas," I eagerly said. "Hi," he said as he flashed me a grin that lit up the back seat. He tilted his head back so he could see me underneath his Spider-Man hat that kept falling over his eyes. "Your daddy's girlfriend?" he said curiously. Then his grin spread from ear to ear and he broke into an eruption of giggles. He thought it was funny. So as I smiled back, my nerves dissipated and I felt pretty silly for worrying about this moment to a point where I almost missed enjoying it. For us, this was the beginning. the beginning of figuring out how to create a blended and uniquely crafted family. At the time, I didn't know that those butterflies, the agonizing discomfort, and its posse of mixed emotions would follow me all over for the next several months as I scrambled to try and figure out my role in Nicholas's life. I really hated the term stepmom. It just didn't seem to carry good feelings, and it had so many negative connotations. I kept telling myself, not that, no, not that. But if not that, then what exactly? And if I was struggling to figure it out, I knew Nicholas was also. So I did my best to stand by him as he tried to process my role in his life. Sometimes hanging out and building a bond was really easy and fun. And at other times it was grueling and exhausting to be on the receiving end of constant rejection. But at every turn, I did my best to tell him I wasn't there to try and be his mom. After all, I already knew he had an amazing one. So I told him I was there to be his Deborah, and that could be whatever he needed me to be. A lot for a four-year-old to process, I know. But later that summer, I took Nicholas to the playground. He saw some other kids on the play structure and hurried over to greet them. I overheard them introduce themselves and point out to their parents. When it was Nicholas's turn, he pointed to me and said, "That's my Debois. Do you have a Debois?" That day, I couldn't stop smiling because I realized Nicholas and I had created our very own definition of family. So today, 11 years later, Nicholas is 15 and has a younger brother on his mom's side and three little sisters on his dad's or our side. And we are a mixture of biological and adopted. And because I love my family, I frequently find myself learning from the lessons that a once four-year-old taught me. And that is to walk towards the moments in our life that are cloaked in agonizing discomfort. Because within those moments of uncomfortability and vulnerability, we develop the ability to grow and thrive as a family.
Oh, I'm like, oh, as you're saying your story, I'm getting more and more goosebumps. And then towards the end, I could just feel it in my heart. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Nicholas is so lucky to have you.
Oh my goodness. That is so sweet of you to say. Well, but
before you put in a but and vice versa, you're lucky to have each other.
That's right.
But the theme that I was observing and noticing was, although you were feeling all the feels and you're like, who am I? What is this stepmom position? You kept saying, like, from my experience of this story, like, I wonder what Nicholas is feeling. That's a lot for him to process and him to take on. Right. And I know you're not new to this work of supporting families. So,
right.
You know, we can talk a little bit about that, but I also want to talk about that as we are experiencing our identity shift in whatever role that is in our life, how to hold our emotional discomfort, but also know that the children that are in our world are experiencing their own emotional discomfort. So yeah, I'll give you the microphone.
Awesome. Yes. No, I'm excited to talk about this topic. I think, you know, no matter how many times you work with families, when it's you walking in those shoes, it's just so different. And one of the things I learned, I mean, you observe it professionally working with people, but to observe it in my own life, it's different. And probably one of the biggest things I learned was, if you truly watch the children, watch their behaviors, watch how they interact with you, you'll see the cycles. So when we first met, you know, it was all giddy and fun and just really exciting. And then it's like, I could see on his face. I mean, he was only four, so he couldn't say it, probably wouldn't know how to articulate it, but it was legit like, okay, why are you still in my life? Right? Like, why are you still here? Oh, you're here again. I don't know that you need to be here today. Like, again, these aren't things he would say. He didn't know how to say them. But it can be observed. And so that's where you start to pick up on the fact of, okay, what's going on the inside? And probably one of the biggest things I would gift people who are blending is the concept that just because our children don't ask the questions, isn't an indicator that one, they're not already asking it inside. And two, it's definitely not an indicator that they can't handle it. Now, I think we have to communicate in an age-appropriate fashion. And we don't, of course, want to overwhelm and give them too much to handle. But the reality is they're already asking those questions that they might not be able to verbalize or articulate. And Nicholas was no exception. At four, you know, I was like, all of us, we didn't want to overcomplicate things. But later on, I remember when he was six and able to vocalize a little bit more these questions he had. And so that's when we kind of realized like, okay, he's processing a lot. Like he really is. So yeah.
Yeah.
A lot to sit with, right?
Yeah. He's processing a lot. And the predictor of, I think a lot of times parents try to predict, right? That helicopter, the lawnmower, whatever you want to say of like, how can I get ahead of their emotional reaction? Mm-hmm. So I can predict it. And then when it doesn't go as planned, because it never will, that creates chaos. So
right.
Outside of your personal experience, can you let the listeners know what you do professionally? And then we'll kind of keep marrying the two together.
Sure. So right now I'm honored to help blended families in any way I can as a coach. So I started off as a social worker about 15 years ago, and I've worked within child welfare, juvenile justice reform, and I kept seeing this pattern. And the pattern was that where there is hurt, oftentimes there's role reversals, there's questions around roles. What is our role? What does that look like? And we know that for our own mental health, for our kids' mental health, it is so important to understand family and connection and belonging. And so over the years, I got more and more intrigued with why don't I just focus on advocating for families? And so that's what I do. I help families. And in the blended community, there's kind of this myth. And the myth is that we know changes like will ultimately come if we put in the work and we're very patient and we let enough time pass. But I guess this idea that we're waiting for full on synergy, full on acceptance, full on harmonious blends, right?
Yeah.
That is a beautiful end goal, but why would that be my goal today? I believe in enjoying the journey. And I don't think it should cost us our sanity. Our exhaustion. I don't think that's right, because if I don't have the best to offer or to bring to the table, how would any of my family members enjoy it? So when I work with our families, my goal is to really empower them and to kind of push back on this idea that we're waiting for 2 years down the road. Yes, we are. We of course want the pie in the sky and the end goal to come to fruition. But today, what are we doing in our thoughts, in our feelings, and in our behaviors, in that beautiful triad of change? What are we doing? What are we leaning into our purpose? Are we leaning away from it? And so through that, it's been really rewarding to help position families in a space where they can actually thrive as they're figuring out their unique blend.
Yeah. As soon as you said that, like the today, not the 2 years from now, that was just an aha for me, because when you observe how we do that in most areas of our life, when we have that like fixed mindset or whatever you want to call it, when this season is over, when the kids are this age, when the weather changes, then I will. And it's something outside of ourselves. And the interesting part about blended families is when we have that perfectionist tendency, it's that bullshit that people believe that balance is like an actual thing and everyone's going to get along and there's never going to be something thrown into the mix. It does make for unique blended family situations, but I can hear them listening to this right now saying, yeah, but you don't understand my situation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we have a very toxic, X or very whatever, or this happens, or the transition between this child goes to that home. And then there's the transition period, all the things, or now that person is in another relationship, like all the added drama that is outside of our control. So you know me, I don't like tips and strategies. That is such a triggering word. Like, give me some tips, such a triggering word. But what do you, where do you begin to start when a family's like, I want harmony. I want that ease within myself and what I can control in my home, but there's so much that I don't have control over.
Right.
How do you interact there?
So the first thing that I say is, if you give me 60 seconds, I can only give you 60. So if you give me a full on minute of your undivided attention, I promise I'll give it back, but it's only going to carry you so far. And the same is true when we look at our framework for happiness. We know happiness is a feeling, blah, 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 right? It's not a destination, because the second part of the equation is our perspective. It's our true north. It's how do we define our life as being good? And so one of the things I do walk people through when they're willing to give me more than 60 seconds, now we can lean into transformation. So the first 60 seconds, I think we can, you know, get each other's attention and secure some good hope and elicit some motivation for the next 10 minutes. But the reality is, at some point you got to buy in, man. At some point you're going to have to show up and do the work. And if tonight you can only give me 10 to 15 minutes.
I was like, yes, yes. Right?
You like if tonight you can give me 15 minutes, I promise you're going to feel it. Because here's the thing about the whole, it's not in my control. Everything's not in your control, except for these three things: your thoughts, your feelings, and your behaviors. Mm. When, so in my, I can only speak to what I know passionately, but I can also speak professionally to what I've observed. So what I'll say is, when we're navigating co-parenting with an ex or your partner's ex, right? Like, that can sometimes be a trigger for folks. That's not in my control. They have different rules than my house, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, once you come up with who you are, put in the work to figure out what you value, and then the actions and the thoughts and the behaviors that can mobilize that value, that becomes your blueprint. And so now when we go through life and we experience the ex, or, you know, I hate saying the ex because in my real life, I have a great relationship with Nicholas's mom, but for all intents and purposes, the ex, like, they do something, it's out of our control seemingly, except no matter what facial expression they made to us, no matter what they said behind our back that got back to us, no matter how we feel they might've turned our kid against us, which that hurts, no matter what they do, you still can observe your thoughts without owning your thoughts. You still can have a visceral feeling and say, I'm not claiming you today, because you're not in alignment with who I truly am. So I think when people start to realize that we can position ourselves in a space where we're observers of what triggers us, and we're observers of how circumstances move in front of us and constantly try to trigger and bait us, that we can actually observe those, but not cling and attach our identity to them, we become so much more in control. Doesn't mean you're going to have like ever a year where you're perfect and you never get upset. That's unrealistic. But I think in the day to day, and this is coming from a mom, right, who has a stepson, adopted kids, and a, you know, a bio kid. And I mean, there's never a quiet day. I keep saying, we don't yell in this house, guys. Like, we keep our voice down. So, I mean, it's hectic, it's chaotic, but what we've learned is that perspective. But there's never a day where, for me, it just, I wake up and I'm like, beautiful perspective. They're all yelling. Wonderful, wonderful. No, it comes back to practice. Yeah. So the more I'm baited, the more I have to show up and do the work.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, that's how I would answer that. You give me time, I'll help you.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. Because I don't want to say a win-win, but it's a value added conversation rather than this perspective that somebody else has all the answers. It's right. Like, oh, I have awareness and maybe some tools or support, but you have to be able to like receive it and right. be open to implementing life as a practice. Let's talk about cultural expectations.
Sure.
Of families, of relationships, blendedness. Did you have any children before you became a stepmother?
No.
Okay. So you came right into nurturing, mothering. It was
that's
like,
right.
boom, 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 right?
I married so, in. Yes.
You married in. So curious what that identity shift was for you. And then as you kept bringing more and more children into your vortex, bio yeah. not.
Not a loaded question at all. Real
yeah.
easy.
Yeah.
I'm joking, obviously.
The identity.
So here's the thing about that. When, you know, we have our perspective and every day we grow. So it shifted a lot. And my biggest takeaway for me as a mom is we have this cultural expectation that once we attach the word mom to our name, somehow, and I think sometimes it's guilt-ridden, we do it to ourselves. But I also think that culturally, there's a social expectation that we become these monolithic creatures with one goal, and that is to nurture. And the reality is, like, I personally believe that if you're not leaning into your best self, you can never bring your best self to any relationship, whether you do it professionally with your partner or your kids. So for me, I had to recognize where I was adding that restraint on myself and the guilt that came with it versus, you know, and there are people around me who might think that as well, like, hey, you're a mom, so you're just gonna, you know, do this now, right? Like, this is what being a mom means. So I had to detach from that and create the idea, which we all know this mentally, we are not monolithic, we are dynamic. So leaning into our true purpose of how do I be the best stepmom ever and be the best mom ever while cultivating their relationship together. And, you know, we get complicated. My, our 15-year-old Nicholas, he's over in California. We're over here in Georgia. So, you know, making sure that the sibs are having a good relationship, getting to know each other while also not putting undue pressure on him and his system and yeah. letting him enjoy high school and show up and play basketball. I mean, no one kid is more important than the other. And then culturally, like in terms of expectations, there's a lot of, I think, expectations about how we talk about our kids. So when we adopt, I think there's just so much inherent guilt with some folks when we go out in public. I know I got this was, oh, you look amazing for having just had a baby. And of course I just owned that. I was like, thanks. But the reality is some people feel so drawn to, well, I don't want to misrepresent what's happened here. I want to make sure I'm open and honest. And at the same time, like with Nicholas, you know, I had to learn really early on. I hate the term stepmom, but at the same time, he has a mom. Yeah. He wasn't looking for me to be mom. So, you know, just figuring out how the lens of which we present our family to people. And in that presentation, I've learned we can set the boundaries that this is who we are. And usually I try to speak from a space that is empowering our kids to talk about it, to pursue it. Mm. So you had asked specifically around cultural expectations. I know I spoke some to it. But was there anything else in specifically?
So
in different areas.
I want to ask you another question now, because as sure. you said that, something else came up. How do you hold that boundary for yourself? I'm going to call it an emotional boundary, like in real time. You, and I know everyone has their own experience of this, right? So you're sitting there, you can feel the pressure. Like you're feeling it. How do you like not choose it and choose yourself? Choose like, does this serve me? Is this in alignment? Right. So someone making a comment towards you and you're like, you know what? I don't even know who that person is. So I'm just going to say thank you and walk away because I don't need to explain myself. How do you choose that?
So this is my challenge to everyone. The first way is you just do it, right? You got to start, you got to put in the work. So the first thing I try to do is exactly what you said. Like, we typically, it hurts your feelings somewhere And some people wouldn't use that language. They would say it was offensive. It was rude. So we hear what they say, and then our body typically responds so strongly that we feel some type of way. So if you can just hold it for a second before you own it, you feel it in your gut and you're like, that person sucks. Okay. You let that thought out in your head and now hold it for a second and say, actually, I don't know what they're dealing with. Remember that they are the ones who gave you whatever response it was. They are the authorship of that. And typically the majority of what people say has more to do about them than it does the person on the other end. And then, so if you can just hold it for a few seconds, and here's the next part that I think helps us actually mobilize change. Typically, the very next thing we want to do is we want to tell somebody about it mm-hmm. so that they can validate that, yeah, Deb, they suck. But here's the other part of it. Who is responsible for my wellness? And who's responsible for my happiness? My perspective. So is it, in fact, somebody else's job to make me feel better? No, everybody would agree. It's not anybody else's job. But what do we typically do? Sometimes we'll go and we'll talk to our best friend or our partner, and we, you know, download what somebody said. And typically they bounce us right back up to happy. We're good to go and we move on. But every now and then they say, quote unquote, the wrong thing. Why is it the wrong thing? Because they didn't meet our need of making us feel happy. Mm-hmm. So we have to actually practice not running home and telling someone about it. And once you do that, you will be empowered. And then do it again. Like, it's like you can keep the secret to yourself or something. And before, like for me, that helped build so much resilience that I really did get to the space where I was thinking, oh, who cares? Like, that's not me, that's them. Now I will say, when you have kids around you, it's a little bit different, because they might be like, why'd she say that? So you do have to talk about it a little bit, but yeah. If you can try not to take the bait that the vulnerability of the moment is giving you and just lean into that uncomfortable moment, growth is right behind it.
I mean, if you and I were in a conversation, I could just imagine us in public, like every trigger or like in a, you know, sitting having a cup of coffee or whatever, just like, oh, there's trigger. Like just that emotional intelligence conversation. Like, oh, how did that feel to you? How did you process it? Mm-hmm. I remember at the beginning, I don't know how long ago I started doing this. I would visualize in any human interaction, mainly outside of my home, because I feel like I've been able to manage it in the home, visualizing somebody putting their shit, like projecting their shit on like a platter in front of me. Especially very triggering people. And I could just now smile and just imagine that I'm flicking it back at them, not in a rude way, but I'm just like, that's not mine. And it just like, there you mm-hmm. go, just flicking it back and knowing that, you know, their projection could be jealousy, but it also be hurt. It could also be curiosity. And then I like what you said where, okay, if it triggered something inside of you of that, like, I need to tell somebody else, right? They trigger that in you. So whatever was inside of you, that cup, they've triggered it. So it was already there. So they gave you that opportunity to like, look at what's inside of you. There was anger inside of you. That's why they triggered the anger. There was sadness inside of you. That's why they triggered the sadness. They didn't make you sad.
Yeah.
Comes out, the anger comes out and you don't, like you're saying, you're so uncomfortable with that emotional state that you need to puke it on somebody else. Right. Yeah. So what I've caught myself doing now is I know I'm like, that's drama. Like I catch myself going, that's drama. And I know when drama is coming out of me or I want to project to be like, they were so mean or they did this, I'm upper limiting myself. Mm. And that's a growth opportunity. Cause I'm like, you just added drama. So sometimes now I see that whether it's team, clients, I have this Deborah client. Oh my gosh. I'm just kidding. But like,
sounds pretty cool to me.
I know, she's amazing. So it is the triggers, the emotional triggers. You're like just watching and observing, but I love how you framed it because you're able to hold it. And again, it comes back to this practice. So when you're practicing this, you're saving yourself so much time and energy. like being able to like flip it like that, you're like, I'm not losing all these hours in a day anymore. Yeah. AKA, I feel more productive. I feel more alive.
Yeah. So two things with that. One, remember who's watching all this, right? Like our kids. And they're already in this comparative model. Like they don't mean to be, but they're kids. They're at school. They compare themselves. They're on social media. They compare themselves. So if they see mom or dad bite, it's a modeled behavior. And the opposite is powerful too. I mean, when they see, I mean, you know, we've had people say, brush that dirt off your shoulder. But literally when they see what that looks like, now they can model it. They can't do it if you don't teach it to them. So that's what's hanging in the balance if we don't get it right. Just FYI.
Yeah.
The other side of that is something really good that escaped me, but I'll come back.
Okay. Can I say something about that then? Every time I'm listening or reading on parenting, because you and I are very passionate about that, families, relationships, everyone always comes back to the research shows it doesn't matter what model, what strategy you are picking, role modeling is it. It's like any area of your life. If you're trying to change something, like I read all these different books and I try to observe the through line because everyone has their own way of doing things. And I'm like, everyone's saying the same thing, different language, but here's the through line. And when it comes to parenting, role modeling is it. Like you got to do the work. If you want to teach your children anything, you have to lead.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you got to go home and spend 3 hours, right?
Oh, gosh,
but just show up at first and do 15 minutes. And this kind of goes right back to, I remembered what it was going to say. Let's say that it's your partner, it's your spouse that you're going to dump everything on every day. What do you think the impact is for them? You are giving them a direct residual effect of the fact that you cannot process or hold yourself accountable for regulating your own emotions and progressing and making change. And now your husband or your wife or your partner has to sit with that. And I hate seeing that, especially when they're the ones working really hard to work through their stuff. It's really not a fair expectation that we ask other people to be responsible for our happiness. Mm. And our children, going back to the model behavior, right? All we can start with is us. So when I found myself doing this about a month and a half ago, I was in the living room and I'd probably in a great mom voice that was in control and calm, cool, and collected said, guys, remember, we don't scream. I probably said that about 4 times. And then the last time I said it, I was screaming. I was like, we don't scream. And that night I was like, oh yeah, it starts with me. So it's like, we don't scream unless we're really pissed is what I taught them, right? Like we don't scream unless they don't listen to us unless we scream. So again, it starts with me. Like at the end of the day, no matter what I want my kids to do differently, it doesn't matter if it's Madison, Mackenzie, Monroe, Nicholas, it starts with them. And I think modeling, I mean, it sucks. I wish it were different, but it's not. And at least it has a return on investment. So when you do put in the work, you do see the change.
Yeah. I think that's what we need to remember, the ROI, the return on investment, and investing in whatever your bigger why is. If you're like, I want my children to have these, you know, I'm going to keep doing the things so that I can impact their relationships when they're older. Oh gosh, you just said something that sparked something. Oh, the discomfort, right? The imperfection of doing the work. I don't like the word hard, but how hard, how emotionally uncomfortable it is to do the work as an adult. Just imagine what it's like to do a child.
Sure.
To do it as a child.
Yeah.
We're not editing that part out. I'm just rephrasing my sentence to do it as a child. And imagine a child, like I want everybody to put themselves in that child's shoes, trying to gain these emotionally intelligent skills with adults around them who are not doing the work. Like that's almost 10 times more effort, right? And that is not a child's job. That is not, no. So What do you have? What's your biggest takeaway? What's your hope or desire for a woman that's listening to this in a blended, beautiful family, or about to make a choice that may create a blended family or single family? What do you want her to walk away with? Or
him? I want you to know that it can be joyful. And the joy might not be the ever-present feeling of happiness. But remember, if we can build a tenacious framework, which we can do together, but around our perspective and create fiber there, you can hang on to your joy in this journey. You don't have to wait for 5 years down the road. You don't have to be miserable in the process. I want to empower everyone listening with that. And as you blend, I think sometimes we feel like the spotlight is totally on us, and it is, because it's not just the ex who's watching, or it's the ex's sisters and her brothers and her parents. And it doesn't matter if they're watching or not. It feels like they're watching.
Yeah.
And so the other thing is, especially like in my example, if it's similar for you, where maybe your first kid is by marriage, you don't have any experience. I don't care how many times you worked with kids professionally. So know that it is okay to trial by error and feel so uncomfortable in the moment, not know exactly what to say in the moment, feel like you're an imposter. That's okay. Lean into it. Stay in there with those kids. Stay in there with your spouse and tell them, man, I don't know what to say. I'm really sorry you miss your mom right now. What can I do? You want to watch a movie? Whatever it is, don't betray your happiness or yourself, and just hang in there. There's a reason why you're interested, right? There's a reason why you asked this family to adopt you. Mm-hmm. And your best life is right there waiting for you to show up tonight and just give 15 minutes. And if you want to know more, happy to talk, happy to, you know, show you what those 15 minutes start with. And then I think a really cool thing is we have the opportunity to help our kids spend 15 minutes. Yeah. And for, you know, some kids, maybe 5.
Yeah.
But we can all start with, hey, what do I value?
I love it. And where can people find more about you?
DeborahStone.com. So DeborahStone, Stone, STONE.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
There it is. You just listened to the Emotionally Uncomfortable podcast. If you want to take this conversation to the next level, head on over to our private Facebook group community, heatherchauvin.com/Facebook. My last name is spelled C-H-A-U-V-I-N. That's heatherchauvin.com/Facebook. Also, if you are a huge fan of this show, please rate and review it on iTunes. Every review helps another woman like you take back control of how she wants to feel and become emotionally uncomfortable. I truly believe the better we feel, the more alive we become, this is how we are going to change the world. And if you've been watching me for a while, if you've been on the fence and you're curious, how can Heather help me? Head on over to heatherchauvin.com/work with me to check out my mastery and mastery business coaching programs. That's heatherchauvin.com/work with me. This summer, I'm being incredibly intentional about community. My word for the summer is community and connection. And I just want to say thank you for being a longtime podcast listener, or maybe you're a new listener, and I wanted to celebrate you. And I wanted to create more connections. So what I've decided to do is do a merch giveaway. If you are unfamiliar, I have a merch shop on my store. So you can go check it out on my website at heatherchauvin.com. You can purchase anything you want. But what I'm actually going to be doing is I'm going to do a giveaway for my hat, my How Do You Want to Feel baseball cap, one of my journals, which is the Emotionally Uncomfortable journal, and my beautiful myrrh mug, which is called Excited Shitless. Excited Shitless is when you take the leap and you're like excited about your next level, but you're also terrified. So go check out the merch on my store. But here is how you can dive into the actual giveaway. Go to Instagram and find me at Heather Chauvin, Chauvin. And right now I have about like 19 or 20,000 followers. So if you're finding someone else that doesn't have that, that's not me. And all you have to do is follow me to be entered into the giveaway, and then send me a private message that says giveaway. That's all you got to do. Go follow me on Instagram at Heather Chauvin, Chauvin. I think there's an underscore after that. Follow me and DM me giveaway. And what we're going to be doing in a few weeks is we are going to announce the winner, and then we will reach out to you in your DMs on Instagram, and we're going to ask you which item you want in the merch shop. Do you want a hat? Which color do you want? Do you want a journal? Do you want a mug? Do you want a signed copy of my book? And yeah, that's it. It's all about connection, community, and gratitude for me this summer. And I just want to say thank you for being a listener. Thank you for, you know, all the messages that I receive on Instagram and in email. I'm just here to help women thrive. And this is not an emotionally comfortable journey, as you know, hence the reason the name of the podcast. And in order to attract more time, more energy, more money in our lives, we got to take some emotionally uncomfortable action. So I'm right there with you on the front lines. And yeah, go follow me on Instagram and DM me. Giveaway.